fascinating all at once. Looking at it felt like staring into a beautiful nightmare, but something about it made me feel seen somehow. As if she'd plucked my demons from my mind and put them on canvas or sculpted them out of metal. Even her charcoal drawings felt three-dimensional somehow. I'd found myself bookmarking the page, checking back time after time. I'd memorized every piece of information on the site, but all it left me with was a mystery that never released its hold. The bio was purposely vague, not even giving her actual location. There was no photo of Arden, only her art. But I was like a man starved for any morsel I could get. It had been a jolt this morning when I realized that the woman who held me spellbound at the gym was the same one whose art had long held me in a chokehold. Somehow, meeting her only added to the mystery. Arden stared at me. "If you've seen my site, you know I sell through a gallery in town. They're your best bet for purchasing." "What about a custom piece? My new house? I'd like something that fits perfectly in that space." I was pushing and knew it, but I was greedy for even a few more seconds with her. Annoyance flashed across Arden's expression as she shoved my card into her jeans pocket. "The billionaire's building yet another house. Color me shocked." "Interesting." I knew from my friendship with Cope that the Coulsons weren't exactly struggling, but I also had no idea what had brought Arden to live with them. Maybe she'd struggled growing up and had something against those who carelessly threw their money around. But I knew better than anyone that money didn't guarantee happiness. It didn't protect you from pain or loss. It did create ease that came in handy, and I wasn't about to apologize for that. "Consider it my way of helping the local economy," I said, watching as she stepped back and turned to face the canvas. Strands of her dark brown hair were starting to spill from her bun, showing hints of the ferocity she clearly had at times. "I don't do commissions." "Even more interesting." "Name your price." The words were out of my mouth before I could stop myself, tipping my hand yet again. Arden whirled around, her eyes flashing pure violet. "I'm not for sale." "Oh, hell. I wasn't suggesting you were, weren't you?" Arden pressed. "No rules apply to you, do they? You think you can flash your money and the answer will always be yes." "Arden, my art isn't something to be controlled. I'm not something to be controlled." She tapped the screen on her phone and ear-splitting rock filled the speakers again. "You know the way back to the main house?" Arden turned back to the canvas, dismissing me entirely, and I didn't blame her. I'd royally stepped in it. I glanced down at the gray beast standing between us. The dog glared up at me as if to say, "Get moving, pal." I didn't blame him. Sighing, I stepped into the late morning sun. It was already at least 80 and would soon be tipping even hotter. My phone buzzed in my pocket and I slid it out. "Philip Pierce, we have not received your RSVP for your sister's wedding. Please rectify this immediately." The slap of the text was a visceral thing, far worse than the sting of Arden's blade against my neck. My back teeth ground together as I stared at the words. It was a jerk on an invisible choke collar, and we both knew it. The DNA donor known as my father was used to getting what he wanted by any means necessary. It was why he'd cut me off at age 18 when I refused to follow in his footsteps. It was why my sister bowed to his every whim, even down to choosing the man she was set to marry in a matter of weeks. And it was why my mom no longer drew breath. It didn't matter how much I loved Ellie and wanted her to know I was there for her no matter what. I couldn't spend a week at our estate in the Hamptons pretending I didn't hate Philip Pierce with every fiber of my being. I locked my phone, shoved it into my pocket, and breathed deeply. The scent of pine trees and fresh air filled my lungs. As I looked around at the place Cope had carved out for himself in the world, I understood why he'd chosen to build here. The vastness and wide-open spaces reminded me to breathe, which was exactly why I was going to build my next chapter here, away from the pressures of the city, my father, and everything else.
5. Arden. I scowled at the canvas as strains of one of my favorite bands pounded through the speakers. Usually, I could count on an old favorite to get me into my creative headspace, but not this time. The canvas stared back at me, its blank spaces taunting me. It was all Lincoln Pierce's fault. He'd come to my studio yesterday, looking more like some dark, avenging angel than a billionaire business magnate. When I tried to focus on work, all I could see was his stupid smirk and how it made a dimple pop in his cheek. My phone buzzed on the table for the dozenth time. I let out a growl of frustration, slammed my brush down, and picked up the device. Sliding my thumb up the screen, I unlocked it and tapped the text icon with 23 alerts. 23. I hit the sibling group text chain, reading the first message. Kai has renamed this group my organ donors. It was a constant battle between us to one-up each other in renaming it. Well, it was mostly Cope and Kyler, but that wasn't a surprise. Those two had gotten into more trouble growing up than the rest of us combined. Kai.
Too much? Your bullet hole's still leaking water when you drink Copey.
Fallon. That's not funny, Kyler. I wasn't surprised that our most tender-hearted sister had jumped in to reel Kai back from the inappropriate edge. She was the only one he'd listened to anyway. He'd come to live with the Coulsons at 16, furious at the world, and 2 seconds from imploding. Fallon seemed to be the only person who could reach him, and their bond had remained. Kai.
Hey, I helped his ass to the bathroom for a week after surgery. I have earned these jokes.
Cope.
No one cleans out a bedpan like you, buddy.
I didn't want to admit the relief I felt just seeing Cope's name in the chat, cracking jokes like always. I could pretend that he was in hockey preseason instead of at some fancy physical therapy place Link had set him up at. Me. I thought I had you idiots on silent. Who turned this chat off, do not disturb? Rhodes. I might have made some adjustments when I stopped by the other day. Kai.
That's cold, eh? Muting your siblings? The people you love most in this world.
Me. I'm turning my phone on silent now. Bye. Trace.
No, you aren't, because it's a security risk.
Of course, the eldest and most overprotective of our bunch would point that out. He was more than just the sheriff of this county. He'd also taken it upon himself to be law enforcement in our patchwork family. I lifted my phone, took a selfie of me sticking out my tongue at him, and hit send. Kai.
Don't worry, Arden can kick everyone's ass on this chain except for me.
Me. Including you? Shep.
In case you were looking for photographic proof.
A second later, a photo appeared of me putting Kai on the mat in an armbar hold. It made me look like a badass, but as good as I'd gotten, I knew Kai had let me have that one. He'd been training for years longer than I had, and his style had an edge that mine didn't. The kind that came from struggling to stay alive when no one had your back. Kai.
Come spar with me tonight, Bob the Builder. We'll see how you feel then.
Fallon. You know Thea will cut your balls off with her garden shears if you give Shep another black eye. Shep's girlfriend had not been pleased when he came home rocking a shiner after their last session. Kai.
Scratch that. Thea scares me. How about we throw a dager at Cope's mega mansion while he's out of town? Gotta use that pool while we can.
Cope.
You try to throw a party while I'm out of town, and I'll pour peach schnapps all over your precious truck.
Kai.
You play dirty hockey, boy, but just remember, I have photographic proof of you streaking down Cascade Avenue the night before graduation.
Cope.
And I have photographic proof of you letting Keely give you a makeover.
Fallon. Nope, I've got that one. She sent a photo of Trace's 6-year-old daughter biting her lip in concentration as she swept gobs of blush over Kai's cheeks. He might look like a cross between a mountain man and a tattoo god, but he was putty in his niece's hands. Kai.
I'm letting Keels paint all over Cope's walls with those glitter markers she loves so much.
Cope.
Don't you dare.
Rhodes. You're just tempting him by saying that. Cope.
I've got Link staying at the house. He'll protect it from a glitter attack.
I stilled, every nerve ending in my body going live. Just reading Link's name sent images of him dancing through my mind. Those vibrant hazel eyes pinning me to the spot with questions I could never answer. The twist of his lips when he smiled. That damn dimple. My fingers flew across my phone's screen. Me. Thanks for the chaperone, by the way. Kai.
Uh-oh, you really pissed off the Princess of Darkness now.
Cope.
Link needed a place to stay while he looks for property in Sparrow Falls, and Shep works on a house design. It was the least I could do.
I didn't need the reminder. I was happy living in denial land. The thought of Link staying within a 2-minute walk from my house, moving to Sparrow Falls even part-time? Nope, nope, nope. Me. I'm helping Keely douse your walls in glitter. You deserve it. I flipped the notifications on the chat back to Do Not Disturb, frowning at the fact that Rhodes had switched it off in the first place. More evidence that she was worried. Or maybe it was simply because she'd found happiness and healing and wanted the rest of us to as well. My lips twitched at the image of our sunshiniest sister ending up with the broodiest guy I could imagine. One all but allergic to color. But the grumpy ex-FBI profiler had turned out to be the one for her. And she was the one for Anson. An uncomfortable sensation slid through me. An ache that reminded me of the growing pains that woke you up as a kid. I shook off the feeling, placing my phone face down on the table. No more distractions. I stepped back, trying to take in the canvas with fresh eyes. Something about it still wasn't working. Over the years, I'd found that the painting would never come together if I didn't get the first broad strokes right. But that didn't mean all was lost, and not yet. The canvas had paint in some areas, and pencil marks that were supposed to be my map in others. I tried to erase the sketch lines in my mind and let go of the plan I had to see the endless possibilities. The spark of something lit. It was just an ember of an idea, but I gently blew on it, letting it grab hold. I quickly moved to my paints, my fingers flying over the rows of options before stopping on Perylene Red. It was a deep cherry red, not a color I used often, but exactly what I needed today. I crossed to my palette and pressed some out of the tube. As the music and my vision took hold, I lost myself in creation. First, in the darker colors I'd started with, the purples, greens, and blues. Instead of trees, I painted thorny brambles, a tangle you'd never be able to escape. But then the red came, slashes of color against the darkness. They were messy and imperfect, just like Link invading my space with his charm, vitality, brash humor, and challenge. I smeared the blooms across the dark canvas in an unmeasured way, some of the edges darkening with the deeper colors around them, until Brutus let out a loud bark. I jolted, just then realizing someone was pounding on the door. I reached for my phone, ignored the countless notifications, and turned off my stereo. The knocking stopped as soon as the music did. I stilled. The security alarm for the property hadn't gone off. It could have been Link at my door or an axe murderer, like he'd suggested. Honestly, I thought I'd take the axe murderer over someone who had me painting fucking flowers. My fingers flew over my phone screen until I reached the app for the security cameras. Cope had an elaborate system covering his property. He always said it was because of his hockey star status, but I knew the truth. When I finally moved off the Coulson Ranch property, my siblings, Nora and Lolly, all wanted to make sure I was safe. Their need for me to be secure felt stifling at times, but like a warm embrace at others. As I tapped on the screen for the camera above the door to my studio, I had to admit the system came in handy at times. Denver looked up at the camera, grinning the second it came on and flashing a peace sign. I couldn't help the snort that left me when I saw his attire. He'd gone a bit over the top with his hippie chic outfit. His long, light brown hair hung loosely around his shoulders, a few thin braids among it with feathers at the ends. He wore a flat-brimmed hat, a white tee with countless turquoise necklaces, and dark-washed jeans with paint splatters that I knew were put there by some designer and not by working on a piece. Because while my art dealer and manager of the gallery space I owned appreciated art, he didn't have the patience to master it himself. I sighed and headed for the door, giving Brutus a hand signal to be at ease. The moment I yanked it open, Denver strode in. He never waited for an invitation or worried he was disrupting my flow.
"Have you seen a doctor about your potential hearing loss yet?"
he asked, making a beeline for the painting. I fought the urge to go stand in front of it and try to block it from view. I was never crazy about people seeing works mid-progress, but this was different. More. Something about the piece felt far too personal to have Denver staring at it and assessing every brushstroke. The thought didn't make sense, not when I was used to displaying my darkest moments on canvas or in sculpture. I bled into my art, each piece carrying a piece of my soul. So why was this one so different? "Den," I called, trying to get him to turn away from the painting. He studied it for a few more seconds before turning.
"I could hear every scream in that god-awful stuff you listened to from the main road."
My lips twitched. "Not the mystic chants you're used to."
"Hey,"
Denver said,
"don't knock it until you try it. Maybe it'll clear the storm cloud hovering over your head all the time."
"But then what would I make art about?" I challenged.
"Good point."
He turned back to study the painting.
"This is good, really good. A little different. I like it. It'll be a good match for the auction."
"I'm not sure it's going in the auction," I said quickly. I might hold on to this one for myself, and I rarely did that. Denver glanced at me, his eyebrow lifting.
"Shouldn't you be focusing on pieces that will be part of the fundraiser?"
"You know it doesn't work like that for me. I have to go where the creativity leads." He was quiet for a moment, studying me the way he had the painting. I fought the urge to squirm. Finally, he seemed to see something he needed and released his gaze.
"All right. Don't forget we have a meeting next week at the Collective."
I groaned. "Do you really need me there?" Denver just shook his head, looking exasperated with me.
"This whole thing was your idea. The show, the auction, for a good cause, remember?"
I knew it was. Raising funds to expand art programs for youth in the Sparrow Falls community, after-school programs and training with teachers in a variety of mediums. I was good with the work that needed to go into it, less so with the socializing. "Fine," I mumbled. "I'll be there." Denver moved in closer, dropping his hands to my shoulders and crouching slightly so we were eye to eye.
"We would have a much larger turnout if you'd agree to give an interview."
Alarm bells rang out in my mind and every muscle in my body stiffened. "No."
"Arden."
"No," I said, dipping out of Denver's hold. "You know interviews are a no-go for me. Not my thing." They were so much more than a no-go. They were the kind of thing that could get me dead. The witness protection guidelines swirled in my mind. Even though I'd opted out of the program over 7 years ago, the rules were still branded on my brain. No contact with people from your old life. That one was easy. My parents were gone. Now nothing more than names on tombstones on the other side of the country. I had no other relatives except for a cousin on my father's side who'd declined to assume custody of me at the time. And I was a distant memory to the childhood friends I'd left behind. "Don't tell anyone about your past." That one got a little murky. The Coulsons knew bits and pieces now, but I trusted them with my life. They'd proven themselves over and over again, but I hadn't told a single other soul. "Don't have your picture anywhere public." I ran into issues with Denver on that one. He constantly wanted me to do interviews or create social media profiles where I showed my personality. Only by personality, he meant my face.
"Arden, I know attention isn't your thing, but
no." I tried to put as much finality into the word as possible. Denver sighed.
"This arts collective is your brainchild. You're the one who wanted to create a place for all artists in the community to have a home, space to create and share those creations with the world."
I shifted uncomfortably. He wasn't wrong. Art had given me an outlet I desperately needed at the worst time in my life. I just wanted to make sure others had access to the same if they wanted it. I'll come to the meeting. I'll make sure you have paintings and sculptures to auction off to the highest bidder. I'll even smile at every deep-pocketed douchebag who wants to tell me what he thinks my art means while staring at my cleavage. But no interviews. Denver's lips twitched.
Who are you kidding? If some D-bag stares at your boobs, you'll break his arm.
I choked on a laugh. I'd give him a warning first.
I need to check on the gallery's insurance policy.
I grinned at my friend, but it slipped slightly as worry niggled. I'm sorry. It's just... I can't. A muscle fluttered in Denver's cheek, but he nodded.
It's okay. I can probably get Hannah to do one. Maybe Isaiah or Farah.
The other artists in our little collective would likely jump at the chance. And they deserved it, too. They were all incredibly skilled, with interesting perspectives and outlooks. Thanks, Den. He pinned me with a stare.
I just want the world to know your art. You're ridiculously talented. You deserve to be known more widely.
I'm good with my little corner of the universe, I promised him. And that wasn't a lie. But it wasn't the whole truth, either. The truth was I couldn't afford the risk. Because when someone put a hit on you when you were 11 and living in foster care, you didn't take chances. Not when your life depended on it.
6. Lincoln. I stared out one of the massive windows in the office Cope had let me commandeer as mine. I was pretty sure my staff back in Seattle thought I was losing my mind, but it wouldn't be the first time. I'd purchased more than a couple of companies where they doubted my sanity, just like how people thought I was headed into some premature midlife crisis when I bought the Seattle Sparks hockey team. But all of that had worked out just fine. This would, too. A flicker of movement caught my attention, one of Arden's horses grazing in a far field. I wouldn't lie to myself and deny that I'd hoped for a flash of mahogany hair in the distance or an appearance of those gray-violet eyes on my doorstep. I'd gotten neither. I hadn't seen any hint of Arden since she'd all but slammed her studio door in my face days ago, and I didn't blame her. But it also made apologizing difficult. The last thing I wanted to do was invade her space without her permission, and if I texted Cope and asked for her number, it would give far too much away. Link? Shep's now familiar deep voice pulled me out of my swirling thoughts. I turned to face the contractor, a sheepish smile tugging at my lips. Sorry, losing myself in possibilities. Shep chuckled, tapping a construction pencil against the desk. I get it. Starting from scratch is always a little overwhelming. But there's something rewarding about it, too. Taking something that only exists in your mind and bringing it to fruition. He nodded. It's my favorite thing. Creating a vision of what will meld best with the surrounding landscape. It was one of the reasons I'd chosen Shepard Coulson to design and build my home here in Sparrow Falls. He wasn't the kind of designer who went for flash. His creations felt like art in and of themselves, and the surrounding land was his canvas. He always made sure the two came together in the perfect blend. And it didn't hurt that he was Cope's brother, which meant I trusted him. And trust didn't come easily for me, not anymore. I'm looking forward to seeing what you come up with. One corner of his mouth kicked up. Then let's pick your spot. I'd spent the past 2 days looking at parcels of land in and around Sparrow Falls, taking in the views and listening to a realtor talk about all the benefits and pitfalls of each. The woman had been no nonsense and a straight shooter, which I appreciated, especially when I dealt with more than one realtor who simply tried to sell me the most expensive thing on the market. Shep gestured to the 8 listings he'd laid out across my desk. I went by each of them earlier this week just to make sure my instincts were correct. Appreciate you taking that time, I said. It'll save us in the long run. Picking the right build site is half the battle. The right spot to call home. Just thinking the word had me shifting my weight from one foot to the other. I didn't feel like I'd ever had one of those. Not really. The penthouse on Central Park West had been more like a museum, with an endless list of rules of what you couldn't touch and where you couldn't run. My only escape had been the park, charging over grassy knolls and around walking paths with Ellie as our nanny watched, racing around the Peter Pan statue and across countless bridges. Central Park had been the one place I'd felt like I could breathe growing up, and I'd been determined to search out and find that for myself ever since. I'd come close with my place in Seattle, on the water, plenty of space, but it ended up feeling empty half the time with nothing to fill it but too many nights caught up in endless hours of work. I'm not sure these three are right, Shep cut into my thoughts, tapping his pencil against the three listings on the right. This one's too close to Castle Rock. The ground is full of lava rock and cinder. Thanks to all the excavating we'd have to do, it'd take twice as long. It would be worth it if the views were something you couldn't get elsewhere. But other properties have better ones, I finished for him. Shep nodded. These two are so close to that ridgeline, you'll have a higher risk of forest fires in the vicinity. I sure as hell didn't want that. Scratch those three. You know, for someone with a reputation as a controlling bastard, you're being pretty damn agreeable. My lips twitched as I grabbed the three we'd nixed and threw them in the trash. I knew I had a reputation, one that suggested I could be hard to deal with. But the truth was, I didn't play games or manipulate. I said exactly what I wanted and was never afraid of a little hard work. I'd done more than my share to get where I was today. I'm not a tyrant. Tell that to Forbes, Shep shot back. I rolled my eyes. That damn article would haunt me forever. Maybe you can write a letter to the editor. Tell them how agreeable I am. I'll put that on my to-do list. Appreciate it. Shep turned back to the listings. Any of these would make great build sites. They all have pros and cons, but I'm curious if any spoke to you. I scanned the remaining papers on the desk, bringing the images printed on them to life in my mind. But I already knew the answer. It was likely the least practical of the five, farther outside of town and nestled in the foothills of the Monarch Mountains. But there was something about the spot. The property had the sort of quiet that meant you could hear your thoughts. No neighbors in sight. A creek that ran through the land and made wildflowers spring to life around it. Endless meadows that shifted into forests, which melted into staggering mountains. It felt like you were so close you could reach out and touch them. Something about the vastness reminded me that anything was possible, and more than that, it reminded me to stop and breathe, to appreciate the simple beauty that lay around us. I lifted the piece of paper that read Meadowlark Lane. This one. The grin that spread across Shep's face was like a kid's at Christmas. You know it's a good 30 minutes outside of town, and you have the potential of getting snowed in come winter. Even that sounded like heaven. No one able to get to me. The ability to turn off my phone and simply be unreachable. I don't mind that, but you'll have to run through what I'll need. I grew up back east, so I'm familiar with snow, but something tells me Manhattan snow and Sparrow Falls snow are slightly different. Shep outright laughed then. How do you feel about getting a truck with a plow set up? It was my turn to grin. I'm in. I'd recommend solar panels that feed a storage battery, but you might want a generator on top of it just in case. You'll be on well water, so you're good there. Are you thinking a guest house or any other outbuildings? A vision of Arden's workshop flashed in my mind, the windows facing that gorgeous view, and an endless array of paintings and sculptures scattered around the space. It was a bizarre thing to pop into my mind. It wasn't like I had a secret art hobby I needed a home for. Maybe it was simply that she'd taken over so many of my thoughts the past few days. There was just something about her, a fiery honesty I'd had too little of in my life. But more than that was the thirst for survival I admired the hell out of. I shook myself of those swirling thoughts, pulled under by gray-violet eyes yet again. A guest house would be good, pool for sure. After sparring, swimming was my favorite workout, the only one that truly cleared my mind. I'm not sure about others. Can we start there? Of course, Shep said, gathering up the other listings and tossing them into the wastepaper basket. I won't get started on an official concept for the main house until you close on the property, but I might doodle some preliminary ideas to see what you like and don't. Is there anything else you want to cover today? I think we're good for now, I said, setting down the Meadowlark Lane listing and running offer figures in my mind. All right, then, I'll get to work, he said, starting for the door. Shep, he turned, waiting for whatever I was about to say. I cursed myself, but kept on going. In for a penny, in for a pound. What's the story with your sister, Arden? Shep's easygoing demeanor shifted in a heartbeat. Gone was the slight grin and open expression. In their place were hard eyes and a mouth set in a grim line. That's a no-go zone. You want to get laid, you look elsewhere. My spine straightened as a prickle of suspicion skated down it. I should have been insulted by the idea that Shep thought I would use his sister to get off, that I would treat any woman with such callous disregard. But I couldn't be bothered to even consider that when I was too focused on the reasons why. Why was Shep this protective of Arden? It made sense that he would look out for a younger sibling, but this stark flip in demeanor and intense reaction didn't make sense. Not how I meant it, I said, assessing the best approach. I was used to that sort of thing in business, how to get the information I needed without showing my cards to my opponent. But Shep wasn't my opponent, and I wouldn't lie to him. Just curious. I hit up Kai's gym early the other morning. A smile tugged at my lips. Think I might have startled her because she held a knife to my throat. Shep stared at me for one beat, then two. Then he barked out a laugh, running a hand through his rich brown hair. Shit, Link, I'm sorry. She turns that music up to ear-bleeding levels and could be a little trigger-happy. Please, tell me she doesn't actually have access to firearms. I'd definitely be missing a little of my ear. Shep shook his head and sighed. No guns, but definitely knock and wait to be invited in. Kai's trained her in jiu-jitsu. She's pretty damn good. She's not half bad with a switchblade either. I'm going to give her shit about that one, he said, amusement filling his expression. Something about the pleasure Shep got out of hearing about the interaction and the clear affection he had for his little sister had a pang taking root in my chest, worry rising alongside it, concern that my sister, Ellie, had gone so far down a road she couldn't come back from it, and worry that I might lose her to a world we'd always sworn we would never be a part of. I shook that off, refocusing on the conversation at hand and finding out what Arden's story was. Is there a reason she's so quick with a blade? A shadow passed over Shep's expression a split second before he donned a mask. I was good at reading those defenses, a childhood spent trying to figure out people's motives or determining when they would snap had trained me well. He shrugged, the motion meant to be read as careless, but I could see the tension winding through Shep's shoulders. We've all got stories. Hers isn't mine to tell, he said. Fuck. I'd been right. This was about more than Cope's attack. Something had happened to Arden. Something bad. Something I didn't have any right to know about. But that didn't stop me from wanting the information. I bit the inside of my cheek until the coppery taste of blood filled my mouth. Whatever it took to keep from pressing Shep for more and stop myself from showing him every damn card in my deck. Understood, I said, my fingers twitching at my sides. I needed to spar or go for a swim, maybe hike into those beautiful mountains where I could breathe. Shep held my gaze for a beat longer than was typical. She likes her space. I recommend giving it to her. I understood that, too. Heard the warning that lay beneath his words. I lifted my chin, a gesture that said I heard him, but I didn't give him the words that said I agreed to his terms, because they would have been a lie. Arden's ferocity and vitality pulled at me. It was the sort of thing that grabbed you by the throat and never let go, forcing you to wake up and pay attention. I'll walk you out, I offered, already heading in that direction, as if Shep didn't know the way far better than I did. I'll shoot you a text when I've got something for you to look at, Shep said as he headed outside and toward his truck. Sounds good. Thanks for taking this on. He shot me a grin. Kind of fun to work on a project with no budget. I chuckled. Just no gold toilet seats, okay? Oh, man, Shep Mock complained. You'll live, I called over my shoulder as I headed back inside. Just as I closed the door behind me, my phone rang. I pulled it from my back pocket, tapping accept as I read my second-in-command's name. Hey, Nina, I greeted. We've got a problem. Right to the point, like always. I appreciated her lack of pretense and bullshit, but we'd lost the need for that long ago. When you knew someone for almost 2 decades, hand-holding wasn't required for bad news. Nina and I had met at Stanford, both struggling to balance classes and as many part-time jobs as possible while determined to make the most of the opportunities in front of us. We'd both continued on to get our MBAs at the university, specializing in entrepreneurship. The moment I secured enough capital to make my company a reality, I'd asked her to join me. We'd been running Guardian, the company I'd named using my mother's native French, together ever since. On a scale of French fries in your milkshake to pineapple on pizza, how bad is it? I asked, knowing that she hated both with a passion, but that there was nothing worse than the sacrilege of pineapple on Italian food to her. She snorted across the line. The best thing about you being gone is that I don't risk coming across any leftover Hawaiian atrocities in the kitchen. She paused for a moment, and I knew I needed to brace. We lost Ice Edge. My fingers tightened around the phone, annoyance and confusion sliding through me. The company produced a variety of hockey gear and was one of the few with manufacturing operations in the United States. They'd been struggling for the past few years, and I saw a way to turn that around. The fact that I owned a hockey team that could put new eyes on the gear and brand didn't hurt either. How? I growled. I don't know, but I'm working on finding out. Mike went into negotiations today, and the owner said they'd gotten another offer last night and were taking it. He already signed. I cursed. I hated losing deals, but this one bothered me a little more than normal. I'd liked the owner, Sean. I'd thought he understood how we could take his company to the next level. But it was also something more. I'd seen how he was with his son, had witnessed the bond they shared through hockey. It was something I'd never had with my father, and I'd wanted to support that more than anything. Who? I asked. It wasn't unusual for other companies to try to swoop in and disrupt our deals. I'd gained a reputation for wisely choosing fledgling companies, and others wanted in on that. But we'd kept this one under lock and key. Only 4 or 5 people even knew about it. Don't know that either, but I'm working on it. Text me the second you know more, I snapped. Don't get growly at me, Link, Nina barked. I wanted this deal as much as you did. Sorry, I muttered. That's better. Gonna get off this call before you ground me. Nina laughed. Go for a swim, clear your head. She knew me too well. Will do. Talk to you later. I hung up before she could say anything else. If she took pity on me, I'd feel even worse. The moment the call cleared, I saw I had a new text. Philip Pierce. Always wanted to take a trip to Minnesota just long enough to sell them for parts. Beneath the text was a photo of a signed contract between him and Ice Edge. My gut twisted. Sean had no idea what he'd done. My father had likely promised him the world, but his company was about to be no more. And for what? To get at me? To prove he was the apex predator? Another text appeared as I stared at the screen. It gave me all the answers I never wanted. Philip Pierce. There will be more if you don't come home for the wedding. I won't have you embarrass this family any further.
7. Arden. I wrapped my hands around my mug and stared out at the mountains. Breathing deeply, I took in the scent of coffee mixed with pine as I watched my girls graze. Brutus lay on the patio, his favorite spot when the sun had baked the stones for hours. It was beautiful, my little spot in the world. But it sometimes felt like a beautiful exile, the one place in the world where I was truly safe. But that safety could lock you in a place. Not today. In a few minutes, I would grab my bag and drive to Kai's gym. I would make the choice to leave these invisible walls because it was a choice, one that required tamping down the fear stoked by over a decade of warnings to be careful, cautious, and not let anyone truly know me. That sort of endless refrain had a price, one that meant an echo of fear still lived in my head. It also meant I wasn't especially good at peopling. Brutus lifted his head, his gray fur shimmering in the afternoon light. A second later, I heard the sound of an approaching vehicle. My muscles tensed, the way they always did. The stiffening was slight, a mixture of preparedness and not wanting my solitude interrupted. Brutus pushed to his feet just before a door slammed. He positioned himself between me and the path someone would take to round the house. His muscles quivered with the same tension I had. But the moment the figure appeared, he let out a happy bark, his entire body wagging. "Freigeben," I told him, giving Brutus the command for release. He bounded over to the woman whose gray hair was wild, like the creature herself. She wore a workout set with cropped and flared leggings that were tie-dyed in various shades of pink, purple, and blue. Her t-shirt was tied in a knot at her hips and read, "I know my CBDs," with a large bedazzled pot leaf across the center. "My big, beautiful beast," she greeted Brutus, bending to give him all the pets. A smile tugged at my lips. God, I love this woman. Lolly was the first of the Coulson clan to reach me when I arrived in Oregon. She'd come to live with her daughter, Nora, after Nora's husband and son passed away in a car accident, leaving her to raise their two biological children, adopted son, and foster kids herself. But Nora hadn't once considered no longer fostering. She was one of the strongest people I'd ever met, and you could see she'd gotten that strength from her mom. Lolly glanced up at me as she kept giving Brutus his rubdown, endless bracelets jangling. "And how's my little gremlin? I'm surprised you're even awake." I grinned at her. "It's after 2. Lolly straightened, crossing to me and pressing a kiss to my cheek. "But my girl is like a bat, prefers to hunt at night." I snorted. "I'm not exactly hunting." "Okay, fine. My girl likes to create at night." That much was true. My creativity flowed best after the sun went down or first thing in the morning. Sleep never came easily to me, so I figured I might as well get some work done. "How's the new piece coming along?" Lolly asked. Her asking about my work never bothered me, because it never felt like pressure. Maybe because she was the one who'd given me the gift of art in the first place. I'd never forget her setting up 2 easels in front of the horse pasture and inviting me to paint with her. Weeks passed where we simply painted together. She never asked me questions or pushed me to speak. She simply let me open up in my own time. It was Lolly I talked to about my fears that the man with the gun would find me too, that I'd never be safe. And it was Lolly who encouraged me to take all that fear and put it onto a canvas. From that day on, I hadn't stopped, and I had her to thank for it. "I'm not sure," I admitted, the dark bramble painting with its deep red blossoms flashing in my mind. Right on that image's heels came Link's face, his sharp jaw covered in a thick layer of dark brown scruff, his hazel eyes pinning me to the spot.
"That bad, huh?"
Lolly asked, amusement lacing her words. It was then that I realized I was glaring at the grass in front of me, only it wasn't the grass that had gotten under my skin. It was Lincoln Pierce. I tried to dislodge the image from my mind, the memory of the hints of cedar and bourbon that clung to him. But shards of both had dug in deep. "Not bad, just different," I muttered, taking a sip of coffee. Lolly was quiet for a moment as she studied me. I wondered if she'd press, sensing there was more to the story. But understanding me like always, she didn't. Instead, mischief danced in her eyes. "Want to see my new piece?" I turned to her, grinning. "Of course." Lolly had never been a professional artist. She was a true hobbyist, trying out every medium under the sun. The second she got bored, she moved on to the next. But she'd been firmly settled on one for the past year or so. diamond art. Like paint-by-numbers, but filled in with tiny gemstones. Only Lolly created her own images, and they were always unique. Lolly slid her phone out of her pocket and moved closer, showing me a photo. It still needs some finishing touches. I'm calling it Elf Queen. It was a good thing I hadn't taken a sip of coffee, because I would have spewed it all over the screen. Is that, I mean, are those elves doing a little Eiffel Tower action on their queen? She asked innocently, as if she hadn't constructed an elaborate elven three-way. I chuckled and took a sip of coffee. Definitely gift that one to Trace. I could only imagine the shade of red his face would turn. Lolly made a humming sound. He could use a reminder to let loose a little. I grinned down at my coffee. I couldn't wait to see this gift-giving in action. Please do it when I'm there. This weekend, family dinner, Lolly said. I winced. I've got several pieces I need to finish for the fundraiser, and Lolly pinned me with a stare she only used once in a blue moon. My girl, it's time for a command performance. If you don't come, Nora will be over here hovering, stocking your fridge, cleaning your house, poking into your business. I did a mental tally of the last time I'd done a family dinner. It had been a while. It wasn't that I didn't want to spend time with my family or didn't adore them. I did. It was just that when we all got together, especially since half of them were partnered up now, it was a crowd. And crowds weren't my thing. Add to that the fact that all my siblings were a touch overprotective and constantly worried about me, and it felt like I was on display at times. But I didn't want to be a source of concern for any of them. They all had their own stuff to deal with and didn't need me burdening them. I studied Lolly for a moment. Did I make you worry? It wasn't uncommon for her to make the drive out here, but it wasn't a regular occurrence either. Lolly's mouth pulled into a smile, the wrinkles on her cheeks deepening, showing just how easily her lips made the move. I missed my girl. Guilt niggled, and I quickly wrapped her in a hug. Sorry, Lols. I'll do better. You don't have to do anything. You're perfect as you are. But you will need to put up with these old bones checking on you once in a while. I released her and stepped back. Who are you calling old? Lolly cackled. Damn straight. I'm trying to get the girls together for another night at the cowboy bar. You in? I shook my head, but did it smiling. You know that's not my scene. I could do some of that goth face paint, and we could go to one of your murder band shows. I snorted. I'll keep that in mind. I pulled out my phone to check the time and cursed. I gotta run sparring with Kai. Lolly shooed me toward the house. Go kick that boy's ass. It's good for him. I'll tell him you said that, I called over my shoulder. By the time I grabbed my gear bag and Brutus's leash, Lolly had already taken off. I motioned him into Wanda's cab and climbed in behind him. The leather seats were warm from the sun, but not too hot, and I let the feeling skate over my skin as I started her up. I drove into town a little faster than was strictly legal, and hoped like hell one of Trace's deputies didn't pull me over. If they did, I'd never hear the end of it. Downtown Sparrow Falls was the sort of picturesque you'd expect of a small town. Aged brick buildings held a mixture of restaurants, galleries, tourist shops, and other retail businesses. The town prided itself on the elaborate flower beds that dotted every corner of the main drag, Cascade Avenue. Kai's businesses weren't on that main street. He'd chosen a spot off the beaten path in a slightly less perfect part of town. It felt like a conscious choice, part of how Kyler saw himself, despite finding incredible success as a tattoo artist. The fact that he also owned the mixed martial arts gym next door was less of a well-known fact. He liked to stay under the radar there, which made sense given what he'd gotten mixed up with in his teens. Kai also didn't want the world to know what a tender heart he hid beneath all the ink, which meant he didn't advertise the fact that he also ran a youth program out of the gym. I pulled into a parking spot next to a couple of motorcycles and Kai's souped-up black truck with shadow detailing along the sides. I grinned at the difference between our vehicles. He hated that I hadn't fixed Wanda up. I grabbed my phone out of the cup holder and saw a flurry of new texts. Shep has changed the group name to Arden's Next Victims. I scowled at the screen. What the hell had I done now? Shep.
Apparently, Arden nearly made poor Link bleed out on the floor of Kai's gym.
I dropped my head, pinching the bridge of my nose. I thought I was safe from Link spreading that little story around, since it didn't paint him in the best light. But apparently, he didn't care about people knowing he'd gotten his ass handed to him by a girl. Rhodes. You didn't. Cope.
Kai, you need to up your umbrella insurance policy. I already called about mine.
Kai.
We'll never be able to afford enough coverage for Arden.
I let out a little growl of frustration and typed out a text. Me. He barely even bled, you guys. Fallon. You cut him! The chat devolved into a series of stabbing gifs, and I locked the screen, shoving the phone into my bag. Link would pay for this. I wondered if there was a way for me to sabotage the hot water heater, or maybe put pink dye in his shower head. A smile tugged at my lips at that image. Turning off my engine, I hopped out and grabbed my bag, motioning for Brutus to follow. He loved going to the gym during regular business hours, because he was a hoe for all the pets he got. And everyone here loved him. I slung my duffel over my shoulder and shut the door, locking it behind me. Then I headed for Haven. The moment I hauled open the door, the music hit me. I wasn't talking about the rock playing over the speakers. The true music was the sound of gloved hands hitting bags and mitts. It was a rhythm that managed to both soothe and excite. A familiar buzz lit in my muscles as I stepped farther inside. The moment I moved deeper into the gym, Kai greeted me.
Way to go, killer,
he said, his lips twitching beneath his dark brown beard. I flipped him my middle finger. You guys are the worst. He smiled fully then, and I saw why women fell at his feet. The combination of the ink, the muscular frame, and that devastating grin were potent.
You mean the best?
Keep telling yourself that. Someone let out a hoot and I turned. It only took a second to see why. Mateo was sparring with someone in one of the practice rings. Usually Kai was the only one who could give him a run for his money. And it made sense. Mateo was working his way up the pro circuit in MMA. But whoever he was sparring against now had him struggling. I couldn't make out who it was. They didn't look familiar from the back. All I could see was a bare torso. Broad, muscular shoulders with intricate ink wrapped around them, and a head of dark hair. But everything about the man's body was toned. Lean muscles that had been honed into a weapon. The man's fist snaked out lightning quick, clipping Mateo on the chin. But he didn't rest on his laurels. He went for a double leg takedown. Mateo hit the mat in a flash. Ooze filled the air at the smacking sound. But his opponent didn't stop there. He quickly moved into a triangle chokehold, the movements fluid, graceful, and almost beautiful in their restrained brutality. I couldn't help but stare in fascination. The moment Mateo tapped the mat, the man released him and jumped to his feet, offering Mateo a hand. As he pulled Mateo up, he turned, and I saw his face. There was no stopping the way my lips parted on a silent but sharp inhale. Link. His eyes were darker than the last time I'd seen him, the green deepening and drowning the gold as if shadows were doing battle there. There was also a hardness to his features that seemed in direct opposition to the teasing man I'd first met. I studied every detail of his beautiful face, trying to understand the changes. Dark, avenging angel was the perfect description for him, even more so now because he was battling something. I couldn't tell if something had happened or if this was simply his outlet for the things that haunted him, the way my art was an outlet for me. He pulled out his mouthguard, tucked it into his case, and grabbed some water. I watched as he reeled whatever it was in, tucking it away and hiding it from the world. He turned as Mateo asked him something about the takedown. Link gestured, demonstrating the angle of his body during the approach, but I just kept staring, trying to see a glimmer of those shadows that felt so familiar. because the same ones lived in me. Kai bumped his shoulder against mine. It was about as affectionate as he got.
You've got a little drool right there.
Fuck off, I muttered, annoyance flaring to life. Link slipped between the ropes, sliding his feet into flip-flops. Those hazel eyes flashed the moment they landed on me, a grin tugging at his lips as he crossed the space.
Have you checked her for weapons?
Link asked Kai.
Are you trying to get me killed?
Kai challenged. Link chuckled as he glanced down at Brutus.
Hey, big man.
Brutus's tail thumped twice, which only served to piss me off more.
Can I pet him, or will he rip off my hand?
I looked down at my dog. He'll only do that if I tell him to. Link's dark brows lifted at that.
And are you going to tell him to, Vicious?
I glared at the man opposite me. You could have easily disarmed me the other day. Surprise filled Link's expression. Maybe at the abrupt turn in the conversation, or perhaps my statement. But I knew it was true. It only took a matter of seconds to see that he was 10 times better than me in the ring. Actually, at hand-to-hand in general. But he'd stood there and let me press a blade to his throat. Let me cut him. Link shrugged, seemingly without a care.
So?
Why didn't you? I ground out. He stared at me for a moment, his gaze sweeping over my face.
I don't ever want a woman to feel powerless because of me.
And with that, he walked away.
8. Lincoln. My words echoed in my head on the way home. I don't ever want a woman to feel powerless because of me. But I knew the truth beneath the statement. I didn't want to be my father. I gripped the steering wheel tighter and headed back to Cope's property. I'd caught sight of Arden on my way out, moving around the ring with Kai. She was good. Better than good. Probably could have worked her way into the professional circuit if she had half a mind. Her movements were like the rest of her, brash and bold, never coloring between the lines. It was fucking hypnotizing, which was why I just kept walking. Out the door and behind the wheel of my Range Rover I'd driven down from Seattle. I rolled the windows down, hoping the fresh air would turn around my completely sour mood. It didn't. All I could think about were the people about to lose their jobs simply because my father had wanted to make a point. Wanted me to bend to his will. But that was always his way. Philip Pierce needed to know that he could break every single person in his orbit, that he could control them like a master puppeteer. I pulled to a stop in front of Cope's house, taking in the gorgeous blend of wood, stone, and glass. I didn't miss how both the wood and stone had the same reddish-gold hue as Castle Rock to the west. Turning off the engine, I slid out and headed inside. Angry energy still hummed in my muscles. The sparring had helped, but maybe not enough. Just as I thought about going for a swim, my phone rang. I pulled it out of the pocket of my joggers and grinned when I saw Ellie's face on the screen. The photo showed her with a ridiculous expression, sticking her tongue out to one side while crossing her eyes. I tapped the screen and accepted the video call. Hey, Elbel. She made a face. Not quite as extreme as her contact picture, but annoyed little sister through and through. I know how to play that game, Con-Con. I chuckled at the old nickname. At 37, I was 11 years older than Ellie, and when she started speaking, she couldn't quite wrap her tongue around Lincoln, opting for Con-Con instead. Mom thought it was adorable. Dad despised it, expecting his daughter to have a perfect grasp of the English language from birth. How are you? I asked, walking through the foyer and into the open living space. Pretty good, she said, running her hand through her long hair. Everything about Ellie was lighter than me. Her hair was a mix of light brown and blonde, her eyes were a pale green that almost looked gray in some light, and her skin was just a few shades fairer. What about you? How's life in the middle of nowhere? One corner of my mouth kicked up as I pulled one of the sliders open and stepped out onto the back patio. See for yourself. I flipped the camera around so she could see everything I was looking at. Cope had made the outdoor portion of his massive spread a showpiece. The terraced patio had 3 levels. An outdoor eating area with a fire pit and lounge seating up top, a second level with an array of gardens, and a third with a stunning pool that melded into the natural landscape beyond. Ellie's lips parted on a gasp.
Look at those mountains! Toto, you are not in Kansas anymore.
No, I'm not, I said, as I moved to sit on the outdoor sofa and flipped the camera back to me. Ellie stared at me for a moment, studying my face intently.
You like it there.
I do. There's something about the stillness. It's like I can hear my own mind for the first time in years. Ellie got quiet as she pulled her knees up to her chest and sank back in the overstuffed chair in her apartment's living room.
Make any friends yet? Don't want my big brother getting lonely.
Arden's stunning face flashed in my mind. Those tiny freckles that were only visible in the brightest sunlight. The way her lips were stained the same shade as sun-ripened raspberries. Ellie jerked upright.
Did you meet a girl?
I barked out a laugh. I feel like that level of shock at me possibly meeting someone should be an insult. She made a psh sound.
Excitement, not shock. You need someone in your life. So?
I don't know if you can call being held at knife point meeting someone, but it was certainly memorable. Ellie's eyes widened.
You got mugged?
The laughter came more easily this time. No. I surprised her early one morning at the gym. She just reacted. No permanent damage done. My sister's brows raised.
Good for her.
Hey, I clipped. Your favorite brother could have been seriously injured. She rolled her eyes as she leaned back in her chair.
You're my only brother.
That doesn't stop me from being the favorite. Ellie flashed an easy, familiar smile.
I wish I could meet this mystery girl.
Arden.
I like her name.
Me too. Those pale green eyes twinkled, but there was also sadness there, the type that had my gut churning.
Miss you, Concon,
she whispered. Hell. You could come out, I suggested. She shook her head, her loose waves shifting around her shoulders.
There's too much to do for the wedding.
The muscles in my shoulder blades tightened, making me sit up straighter. When I didn't speak, Ellie hurried on.
Dad said you're coming back for it. I'm really glad. I can't imagine getting married without you there.
My back teeth ground together. Her face fell.
You're not coming.
I can't. You know it wouldn't be good. I could deal with my asshat of a father for Ellie if she were marrying someone I knew she was head over heels in love with. But Bradley wasn't that. He was the son of a longtime family friend who worked for his father's hedge fund. I wasn't sure they had a single thing in common. Ellie had started dating him after our dad's none-too-subtle nudging. When she tried breaking it off, Dad made his displeasure clear, and she'd caved in a matter of weeks, going right back to Bradley.
I know he's a hard man,
Ellie said softly,
but he's the only parent we have left. Losing Mom was bad enough. I don't want to lose him, too. Or you.
White-hot pain lit along my sternum. If she only knew the truth. But it carried a weight I didn't want Ellie to shoulder. So I said the only thing I could. You'll never lose me, never.
It feels like I already am.
Each word was a blow. One she didn't realize inflicted the worst kind of pain. Elle, I love you more than anyone on this planet, but I can't be a part of that world for you. It was killing me. Everything about it had slowly strangled the life out of me. Dad was a huge part of that, but it was more. The oppressive weight